should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Sirian. It's great to be here. Hey, we have got a full board. It is Rapid Fire Friday. Fridays, if you're new to the program, on Fridays, we try to fire through as many calls as we possibly can get. 610-363-1110. There are phone lines, 610-363-1110. And we've done a good job so far. We ask you on Fridays if you would be pithy, get right to your point, right to your question, right to your comment. I will try to do the same. I'm usually the one where everything breaks down, but I will try to do the same. It's hard. Sometimes you just got a coachable moment that you can't let go. But we will do the same here. So if you can do that, that would be great. And we'll keep plugging through these calls on Rapid Fire Friday. Look, we've got some very interesting scenarios to work out. President Trump yesterday announced that we're going to institute more tariffs September 1st on the other $300 billion. And most of these $300 billion worth of products coming in here from China are consumer goods, things like telephones and footwear and apparel and lots of other things. But this is it. This is the rest of it. This is the balance of it, I believe. I don't think there's anything left. I think this is going to be the rest of our ammunition that we're going to put some tariffs on. I don't have a problem with it. I think we ought to do it. I'm glad we're doing it. I think it's fine. I think it's about time. I think we need to stop talking to China. I think we need to stop talking about China. I think the deal, let's just consider this trade deal over with, done, not going to happen. And the sooner we can take that mindset, the sooner I hope that we can move on, that we can move on to other parts of the world. We need trade deals with the Eurozone, even if we've got to do it one country at a time. Germany has already indicated they will do a deal with us with or without France. It doesn't matter because France is kind of holding back. But Germany's ready to do a deal. Why haven't we done it? Let's get it done. We've got to go to the other northern parts of the Eurozone. We've got to get to Eastern Europe as well and make deals with those countries. We've got to finish off the Pacific Rim. So we've got to take care of the rest of Asia. So Japan, let's complete that deal, not just a piece of it. Let's get it finished. Let's get to Malaysia. Let's get to Singapore. Let's get to Vietnam. Let's get to Indonesia. On and on it goes. Let's take care of Asia and get that done, as at the same time, we can begin to work on India. We get India, Asia, Eurozone done. Man, let me tell you something. That alone, just the Eurozone, forget the others, just the Eurozone alone is going to have China sweating a little bit. Look, their economy is pathetic right now. It is in a really, really tough spot. And, you know, all because of pride, ego, saving face, and a communist dictator regime that doesn't care a lick about whether their people are starving to death. I mean, that's the main reason. So this is going to dramatically increase the human rights violations. And keep in mind, China and this rate might not be able to keep away an uprising, a revolt by its people. Now they're trying to deal with the one that is going on in Hong Kong. And I'll tell you something, we cannot stand, we in America, I don't think we are positioned very well right now from a mentality standpoint to take another Tiananmen Square. We're not going to be able to deal with that. It is going to be ugly if that happens, particularly under this president. I think China's got to be, well, no, forget China, what they got to be, because I've been wrong about how smart I think they are for a long time. I was going to say they got to be aware of that. Maybe they're not. Maybe they don't care. Maybe it's just irrelevant. Maybe I am totally underestimating the depravity and, you know, the communist regime that only cares about staying in power. But nonetheless, this is hurting markets right now, but the upside to it is it's making markets think that surely the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates again in September. And they may be right about that because the Federal Reserve may be rethinking rethinking their position on that based on this these numbers, the way things came out yesterday with trade. So we'll see. We'll see how it all ends up. But at some point in time, this is going to start slowing down our economy in a little bit more of a dramatic fashion, because we're getting real, real close to it starting impacting us in the pocketbook. I don't think it's going to be a dramatic impact. And we got results yesterday and news out yesterday that the American people have added on average $206, doesn't matter, $5,200 a year to their discretionary income. We haven't been able to say that in at least 16 years. We are adding $5,200 to our discretionary income. Not to mention we've got gasoline prices that still seem pretty low. By the way, oil tanked yesterday. I think it went down almost 6%. So, you know, it doesn't look like rising gasoline prices are in the future unless demand starts going through the roof, which isn't likely to happen, or something happens from a productivity standpoint here in America. So we've got a lot of good things happening, and this is why we've got consumer confidence. Consumer sentiment index, 135. It's unheard of. That's where we were right after the presidential election. And when it hit a new record high, I mean, that is unbelievable. Talk about missing the mark. It jumped considerably compared to what everybody's expectations were. Consumer spending hasn't slowed down a bit. Well, I just said 5,000 more in discretionary income, that would do that. So we've got a lot of good things happening, but business sentiment is waning, and that's what I'm concerned about. Look at construction spending down negative 0.2% this week. That's horrible. That was the June number. That is not good. You know what? That might have been a May number, now that I think about it. I'm not sure, because construction spending, but it doesn't matter. May or June, two big months for construction industry, down considerably. Anyway, we're going to get the ag report right now. Craig Haggard's with us. Then we're going right back to phones for the next hour and 45 minutes. We'll be back right after the ag report. Here's Craig Haggard.
This is Craig Haggard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Well, on the heels of President Trump's remark that the U.S. will impose 10% tariffs on another $300 billion of Chinese goods, the grain markets took a beating. Weekly corn export sales came in at 5.6 million bushels, which was below expectation. And then to add insult to injury, it was announced that another ship of corn from Paraguay is headed to the United States. Toss in technical selling with the poor fundamental news, and we sent the spot corn futures down 7.5 cents for the session yesterday. Feared that the Chinese situation could get ramped up even further, coupled with no signs of an extended hot, dry period for the first 2 weeks of August, pressed soybean prices sharply lower yesterday, with the spot futures closing down 17 cents. If there was a ray of sunshine in this mess, it would be that at 5.3 million bushels, at least the weekly export sales were within the range of trade guesses. Wheat was hurt by spillover selling from the corn pit, as well as some reports that the crop in portions of Europe may be larger than originally thought. For the day, Chicago wheat was down 12 cents, while Kansas City spot futures were 7 cents lower, and Minneapolis ended up down a penny. Weekly export sales came in at 14.1 million bushels, which was towards the low end of trade expectations. Fear of an increased trade war with China had cotton futures retreating yesterday as well. For the session, the December futures were down 147 points, closed at 62.37. Cattle futures were split, with the lean hog futures lower yesterday. October live cattle futures finished the session $1.07.5 higher, plus September feeder cattle futures were 92.5 cents lower. Lean hog futures had another tough outing, with the October futures down $3.52.5 as we were trading with an extended limit yesterday. Class 3 milk futures had a quiet day, with September futures up a point as they settled at 17.61. In the cash markets, choice beef boxes were 70 cents higher to settle at 214.24, while selects were 34 cents lower for the day as they closed out at 189.34. In hogs, the pork carcass values finished 24 cents higher to settle at 87.79. This has been Craig Haggard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
What was running through my mind was I
Great to be here. Welcome back. We're going to get right to calls. It's Rapid Fire Friday. We're going to move through calls as quickly as we can. If you want to queue your call up, we have a line open, 610-363-1110. It's the first time all morning we've had a line open, 610-363-1110. Don't forget Facebook, our website, financialissues.org. If you're watching there, there's a sidebar there. You can put a question in if you want to do that. But let's keep the boards full here. We've got another hour and 45 minutes. We're going to stay with phones. All right, let me go back to calls. Let me go to Robert. Robert's calling us from Texas. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking our call.
Sure.
It has to do with the asset allocation model.
Uh-huh.
For the rehab steps, and I'm actually logged in now. So basically 85% is for the Timothy plan and 15% is for the ETF. When we call the Timothy plan to contribute, let's just say it's $1,000, they want 100% of the allocation in their model to be 100%, but it only equals 85%. So how do we divvy up the money so that when we open up the other account for the ETF at a separate brokerage, and how do you do the math on $1,000?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by what they want.
Okay, so when we call Timothy Plan and we do the allocation per your model, which we've been doing consistently for several years, so when you look at your pie chart, all the different, the cash, the large cap, you say you want to say we have $1,000 and you put them in those percentage, it only equals 85%.
Right.
And at the fund, because they're just people taking the phone call, then you put in, but it only equals on your pie chart 85% for those that the Timothy can, because they don't have the ETF at that in their.
Yeah, I get that, but I don't understand why they can't put 85% in. I'm confused.
Yeah, that's what they say to us every time we call. They can't do it. So because their computer, whatever, is accepting. It wants to show 100% on their platform, but if we're giving them these allocation model that you have, which they have already previously that equaled 100%, now we're only giving 85%.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry, Robert. I am at a total loss. I don't understand.
Right.
I don't understand what they want, and I don't understand what how that works. All I know is if you're contributing $1,000 a month,
right,
and you say I want $200 to go here, $100 to go here, $100 to go here, $50 to go here, and you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
I don't understand what the issue is. What do they care? I don't know why they would care about my asset allocation model. It's irrelevant to a certain amount of money, a percentage of a certain amount of money going into those mutual funds.
We've been giving them percentages of the money. We should be giving them dollar amounts instead of.
I guess you're going to have to.
Right.
Or take the amount of money that you're giving them in your mind and giving them a percentage of that, change the percentage, you know, so it's so that if it's you're putting in $1,000 and you break it down by percentages, that percentage you're breaking it down to adds up to 100%, if that's what they need to satisfy them. And then, you know, the rest of that, so there's other money going into the ETFs.
Right.
You know what
okay,
I mean?
So we're just, long as we're following your model, but let's say to make it satisfy in our mind, I'll just put more in the cash to equal the 100%, whatever I need to do.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Whatever that, just to make it work on their end, I guess that's what you have to do. I'm sorry. I'm confused. I feel like, I should have a better grasp of what you're saying there, but I apologize for that. But I think if you just do that, it sounds to me like that's all they'll need.
Yes, I think that's it now. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we appreciate your ministry.
All right, Robert, thank you. Thanks for calling. God bless.
You're welcome.
Let me go to Brenda from Michigan. Hey, Brenda.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for all you do. I'm a partner, and I'm retired, and I took the plunge and moved my TSP into a TD Ameritrade account.
Okay.
And I sent the broker lots of your information, and he wants to know the allocation needed for each individual fund, and I don't know what to tell him. Is this something I should be doing myself, or do I need him to help set up all this?
I mean, he shouldn't. No. You need to tell him what stocks you're actually putting money into. What are you using, the Timothy, or are you using the
I looked at your allocation model, like for 60 to 65.
Okay.
And I sent him your pie chart, and I sent him the buy list. Like, what? Okay. I don't understand. What more does he need to know, or should I be doing this myself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want them having that information, but that's too late for that now. But I mean, you should be doing that yourself. They can't do that. Technically they're not allowed to do it. So they're gonna push back on that. So you've got
to. So I just need to tell him.
Yeah, you've got to make that decision. You've got to say,
all right,
I'm going to start with this one, and just do it that way, or do it yourself online. Just place those trades, but you can have them do it. But you've got to give them that list.
All right.
Okay.
I'll just take charge.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. Exactly. All right.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right, Brenda. Thank you.
All right.
Right.
Yep, bye-bye. Bye.
All right, let me go to David. Dave calling us from Texas. Hey, Dave.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
I'm a partner and an income investor.
Uh-huh.
It's one stock that you have the deal on that's down 11% plus. Do you still like that? It's been paying a pretty good dividend, but the down's eating up, you know, almost the dividend.
Well, the down can't eat up the dividend. The income's going to stay the same. The income,
I mean, is the loss. It's the loss is.
Well, you don't have a loss unless you sell it.
Exactly.
All right. Let me go back and take a step back to what I always say. And this doesn't really pertain to you necessarily, because I don't think you're in this category. Yeah, although you might be trying to be, but it doesn't sound like you're there. And here's what I always say. That if you're an income investor and you're worried about the downside of a particular fund that you're in or stock that you're in, then you shouldn't be an income investor. And I think that's where you are. And what I mean by that is the whole thing that I teach constantly and talk about on every video on the site is, if you're an income investor, you should be taking that income to supplement whatever other income you have. And you should be only caring about what you are receiving, because you have to pay an electric bill or whatever you got to do. You need the income. And when you're an income investor in the way that I have it established, your income's never going to change, because the income is not paid on the value of a stock. The income is paid on how many shares you have. And that's why I tell income investors, never take profits, because if you take profits, you got to sell shares to do it, and your income's going to decrease. So, but the loss hasn't eaten up anything, because you haven't sold it and taken the loss. So you still have the same amount of shares. Now, if you go ahead and sell it, you will lose money. Eventually, it won't matter, because you'll have it so long and you will have received so much income that there won't be a loss. Oftentimes, people say, well, I'm down 15%. Well, how long have you been taking income? Oh, I've been getting income for 2 years. How could you possibly be down 15%? Because you're not counting all the income you've received as a benefit from that stock. You're only looking at that value. So eventually you get to the point where you've reached so much income that you can't be down ever, you know, unless it goes bankrupt. But the point is about income investing, you can't worry about it being down. You can't, I mean, if you are, there's nothing wrong with worrying about it, but that means you're more of a growth-oriented investor. you're looking for growth. You're looking to buy a stock at $10 and it go up to 12 and hold it until it goes up to 12 and I guess sell it, because the, just like I said, the loss isn't there until you sell it. You didn't really gain the 2%, $2 a share until you sell it. So you're looking to do that. And there's a lot of people that are growth oriented investors, and they shouldn't be income investors, not from my perspective, because they're never going to be happy, because they're always going to look at the volatility on the downside. They never call when the when it's up, but they're going to look at that and get worried on the downside, when all you should be worried is about income. So I would say to you that if you're not, if that's not where you are, you probably need to sell that stock and any other income stocks that you have, because, and try to move those over to growth positions, more risk asset, you know, things that are, you know, going to be a little bit more volatile, but in the long run, in the next 10 years, you'll probably get more growth out of that than you will in those income stocks.
Yeah, so, well, perhaps I misstated that. I'm going to keep it. The primary reason my call was that second thing that was mentioned. They're offering this high discount, and the guy called me about it. I'm like, isn't there a problem when they're offering high interest rates?
Yeah, so they're offering that to you because it's cheaper for them to offer you an interest rate bump than for them to buy the stock and get the income from it. And so they offer that to you as a form that they can still take a piece of it, and they didn't have to buy the stock. So that's one thing that happens all the time. That happens on all stocks sometimes that are paying some income. But I'm not concerned or worried about that. And I'm not worried about the overall value of the company. I will also say that the company's value is probably still going to drop, because they're really struggling right now over in the UK, where they have a lot of positions. But, you know, I'm not worried about it that I would sell it or anything. But, the value is going to be that same. But in the meantime, the income is probably going to go up. All right, it's Rapid Fire Friday, folks. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. We've got an hour and a half of calls, so cue your call. Rapid Fire Friday, get right to the point. I'll try to do the same. I'm not doing real good, but I'm going to keep trying. So I'll try to be pithy and get to the answer. And you're going to be pithy and get to your question and your comment. 610-363-1110. Let me go to Art in Illinois. Hey, Art.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is regarding HC44. I've been a partner for 3 or 4 years. I'm 69 and the 65 to retirement model. I've owned that stock ever since it split off from its parent company, probably, I don't know, 14, 15 years ago. And it's the only position after becoming a partner that I have not sold. And but I did see it on your broad list.
Yes.
So my question is, I know you don't buy from the broad list. I understand that.
Right.
It means I already owned it. I've kept it. But
right.
My question now is, should I continue to retain it, either from a technical standpoint or from a biblical? Because I went to the Christian investing tool, and it's got a 13% violation.
On my website?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if that's true, it just happened. I'll have to look into it, but I won't be able to look into it until the end of next quarter. I mean, I'll look into it now, but I have to wait and see. Oftentimes, my screens disagree with their screens, but
I see.
I still have it on my list as a, healthcare. It's HC44, folks. That's the one we're talking about, HC44. So, look, if you're up in it, Are you up in it? Are you positive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my cost basis on it's $25.
Yeah, there, yeah. So and are you a person that needs income at all, or are you looking?
Not particularly, although it's, you know, based on my cost, it's given me a 16% return.
Yeah, I know. That's why I asked the question.
But I'm not.
Okay. So I would sell it, moving on to something in that this is a large cap company. So it's not like it's a small cap company and is likely to be, you know, real, real volatile. I mean, if you look at some charts of this company from a track record perspective, it always does well. I mean, the last 12 months it's been down. I would suspect that that'll change a year from now, but it is, you know, it's down. The last 2 years it's been up. The last 3 years it's been up. The last 5 years it has been up. So the last 3 years was down slightly, barely red, but it's up 24% over the last 5 years on an annualized basis. So, you know, it's been a good company and it is a good company. It's a good, strong company. I like what they do. But at the same time, I do think it's got some room to run because of all of the cost that they have incurred over the last 2 years that is really pulling down their earnings. And I think that's going to continue to do that. So, I mean, they are on a verge of some treatment for hepatitis C, which is probably going to be good for them, but we're not going to know that. You know, we're not going to know that for a little while yet. But if I were in your place at, you know, your age group that you're in, I would rather see you sell this and maybe move that money into something that's got some something yellow on the list that is more foundational.
Hello.
All right.
Appreciate your help and God bless.
All right. Thank you, Art. I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Let me go to Larry. Larry's calling us from Oklahoma. Hey, Larry.
Hello, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of callers or a few callers ago, you had a fella call in and he mentioned a term that kind of rung a bell and he called a day trader. He was trying to make sure his son didn't become one. And I have a testimony for anybody that's considering that. It's not a personal one, but I have a relative that's fairly wealthy and has no hobbies, and his hobby is buying and selling stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, he was buying and selling. He was telling me when we would get together pretty frequently, tell me I lost so much and I made so much. And da, da, da. And anyway, got up to about $400,000 in it, and what he told me. And in the last 18 months to 2 years, he said, I think I'm going to have to quit trading. He's down to under $50,000. Now, in that, now he calls it his play account, his hobby account. So that's, you know, that's he could afford it, but most people can't. But I just thought I'd throw that out there for you, for everybody to consider that may be thinking I'll buy today and sell tomorrow.
And that's a confirmation of why I always say, don't think you're a trader, be an investor, because it generally in the long term for the average person, that's exactly what happens. And you've given me some help in every time I think that my horses are an expensive hobby. It doesn't even compare to that hobby. So I'm going to stick with my horses, you know, and I'm enjoying them and it's giving me some relaxation. So not stress. Anyway.
I told him, you're not a day trader. You're a speculative trader.
Yeah. Well, that's what they end up. That's what it ends up being, man.
Yeah.
You're right. Great. I'm glad you called because that can be a confirmation to a lot of people. That's not the way you want to go.
I'm not an investor myself, but I do have one quick question. I have heard that the stock market has, on any given 15-year period, any consecutive 15-year period, they've never lost money. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay.
And there's only two 10-year period.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yep. Well, that's what I told him. I said, why are you doing that? Why don't you just buy and hang on to it? Well, that takes fun out of it, I guess. So
I mean, he would have done better in CDs for that period of time.
Yeah.
So think about that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call, Dan.
All right. Does
somebody some good.
Good. All right, Larry. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Folks, 610-363-1110. It's interesting because I told you the week after next, we start a series on some, various things that you need to caution about and to have some thoughts about. And every day for 6 days, we've got a segment. And one of those, I think it's day 4 or 5, one of those is going to be on trading versus investing. So I'm going to talk about some of those things. I think I'll use that example Larry just gave. But anyway, you don't want to miss that. You'll stay tuned to that. We're doing 2 series that week. We're doing this series that I just mentioned. And then in the second hour, we're going to be doing a series on the comparison between socialism and capitalism. So you don't want to miss that either. So I'm excited about that week. I'm sure it's going to be great for a number of people to want to catch that stuff. So, all right, 610-363-1110. Let me go back to phones, go to David from California. Hey, David.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Dan. You know, I wanted to ask you about insurance and, whether or not the insurance standards are going to be changed here. For example, in Florida right now, they're being exposed to more hurricanes, right? I guess it was Louisiana. And so hurricane season started 2 months early. And so global warming, you know, the Earth has had stability for, millions of years, but all of a sudden, with global warming, we're starting to have all sorts of different weather anomalies, and the insurance companies are using old standards, and are they updating? Are they changing their standards according to it, or are they being held in check by the politicians that say it's not happening?
No, they're not. They're not changing any standards, so they're not being held in check. What they're doing is doing a little bit more of what they've done for 100 years. And I don't think that's going to change. There's a law called the law of large numbers. And the insurance companies thrive on the law of large numbers. And the only kinds of insurance companies that struggle during any kind of hurricane season or when we're talking about property and casualty insurance companies now, but any insurance companies that suffer from that are insurance companies that have violated their own rules, in-house rules about the law of large numbers. So the law of large numbers says if you're going to have a large number of people, I'm just using this as a silly example, and these numbers aren't in any way accurate. I'm just using it as an example. Law of large numbers says if you are going to have a very large insurance holders in Miami Beach, then you better have a pretty large insurance holders in North Dakota and Pennsylvania and Iowa to offset some of that. And that's called the law of large numbers. So theory being that, you don't have all your eggs in one basket so that you will always have eggs to eat. In this case, you don't have all your profits in one basket, so you will always have profits to thrive and continue in your business. So that's how that works. They're never going to change their rules. Insurance companies are, when you look at the actuary standards, and if people that looked at global warming looked at that, they would see a wide array of the sciences that say 2 different things.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. 610-363-1110. We've got a couple lines open. 610-363-1110. Rapid Fire Friday on Facebook. Makisha asks, she says, I'm at work. I can't call in. But have a quick question. I have $8,000. I want to know if there is a safe investment that would also allow me to access the money if I need it. Makisha, there really isn't. I would never, ever, ever tell anybody that they could invest money that they may need, for emergencies. It's very dangerous to do. And what I mean by dangerous is that you may need $5,000. You may invest that $8,000. And when you need the $5,000, the $8,000 may be worth $4,500. I'm not saying it won't come back up to eight or more, but that may be where it is the day you need it. Investments are exposed to the markets. They're too volatile. And you should never put any kind of savings or money that you need to keep liquid in case of emergencies or something like that. You never want to invest that. So the only thing you can do with it, unfortunately, is put it into a an interest-bearing account of some sort, checking account. I mean, there are some CDs that allow you to draw money out after you've been in them for a couple months where you can get a little bit of a higher interest rate, and you can check with your bank to see if they have one of those. But other than that, there really is nothing you can do. So basically, you're putting your money in one of these accounts to just have a good, safe place to keep it and earn a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of interest, practically nothing. But unfortunately, that's all you can do with it. But thank you for that. It was a great question. Let me go to Randy in Kansas. Hey, Randy.
Hi, Dan. I appreciate your time. I realize it's Rapid Fire Friday, so I'll get right to the point.
Okay.
I am 67. I plan to work 3 more years. And just briefly on my financial situation, I have a 401k with my previous employer that has about $360,000. And my IRA with my current employer is $190,000. And then we have about $160 in a bank account, and I plan to move the IRA, 401k that has $360 to TD Ameritrade IRA so I can begin investing. I've been a member for probably 4 years, but I haven't really leveraged it. But
okay.
I'm just wondering, with that 401k, I'm moving to an IRA as well as the $160 we have on hand, how to invest that, how to stage in the market, particularly with a TD Ameritrade account.
How much longer are you going to work, did you say?
3 years.
Okay. So I was asking that because I was wondering if you could roll the old 401k into that IRA or move that IRA, but that wouldn't work. Because eventually you're going to have that, you're going to move that IRA into the same TD Ameritrade account that you're putting this 401k in. So I think, Randy, open that IRA account at TD Ameritrade. They will help you transfer, and you're filling a transfer form that'll roll this 401k, old 401k, over to that account. At that point, now I don't know what this old 401k is in, but I suspect it's into some mutual funds that are not biblically responsible. And so once you move them over, or you can sell them where they are, but there may be some higher fees to do that where it is as opposed to TD Ameritrade, but you're going to turn that into cash. And then I would gradually start watching the buy list and the sectors, understand the asset allocation model for you, and just little by little, just make a few investments. Over the next 6 months, 8 months, year, you'll have that all invested. And that would be the way to go. On my asset allocation model, you're in all likelihood, you can ignore to most extent, you can ignore the cash positions that I have in that because you have a very strong cash position right now with that 160. I do think that 160 will at some point in time maybe want to be in an investment account. But for now, I would use it in, I would divide it up just, and I'm saying this based on some uncertainties in the economy right now. I would rather see you take that 160, at least get some CDs, maybe go to Christian Community Credit Union, put 20,000 in a 4% CD that they offer, and then do some, laddered out CDs, and I would ladder them out for the next 3 years. So I would do a 3 year, a 2 year, a 18 month, and a 1 year CD for the rest of it, just to give you some, a little bit more interest rate.
Right, and when I move this cash, when I get the cash settlement on the 401k and put it in TD Ameritrade, would you recommend any short-term CDs there while I invest, or is that worth the effort?
No, that is definitely worth the effort. I wouldn't have a problem with you searching their CD site, and see what they have available out there for, 12-month, 6-month CDs.
So you think I could invest the entire amount within a year frame and be successful if I stage in?
I do. I think that if you take your time and, watch the buy list closely, that in a year's time and over a year period of time, you can gradually get that in. The only reason, Randy, I would want you to try to expedite that a little bit would be if we see a dramatic drop in the markets and the economy. Then I would say try to speed it up a little bit and maybe get some of that money invested while we see some really good valuations, because in the long run, that's going to help you.
Right. So otherwise, maybe go 10% a month or something like that and gradually get it invested over close to a year.
Exactly. So that would be 120 months. That would suit me. Twelve months, I think. I forget what you said. 10%.
10% or 12 months.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that'd be great. I think that'd be great. Yep.
Okay. Great. Hey, I sure appreciate what you do. You're the only guy out there that's given us this information. So. Blessings to you, your family, and the ministry.
Thank you so much, Randy. I got to make one quick comment, though.
Yeah.
So when I say divide that up 10% over 12 months, I would first do whatever you're going to do with, your CDs. So if you're going to do a 12-month CD with some of that and a 6-month CD, then, get that done right away and then start investing, start with what you have left.
Okay.
All right.
I understand. Yes, sir.
All right, Randy. Well, thank you for your encouragement, man. I really appreciate that. And thank you for your partnership over all these years. And, you're somebody that we really, really appreciate, because you are willing to partner year after year, which is obviously supporting the ministry, even though you aren't really using that partnership like you will be now. And we really appreciate your commitment to the ministry for that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. God bless. Bye. Thank you. Great stuff. Let me go. By the way, folks, we've got lines open 610-363-1110. We've got an hour and 5 minutes left. So 610-363. 610-363-1110, and we will get to your call right after this break. Before I do that, let me just as we go to break, let me just encourage you. What a blessing it would be if you could come alongside us with in our ministry. In any way possible, you know, every little thing really, really matters. We're speaking to hundreds of thousands of people every day and millions of people every week. And, you know, if you could find your way, maybe just, well, I'm never going to be an investor. I'm not an investor, but I sure love the work that we are doing that God has put before us. And just $20 a month, maybe you sign up, go to the website and just, you know, do a $20 gift and do it monthly. Man, if we could get people doing $20 a month, it would change. It could change the face of what we do here. And or maybe you just partner with the ministry, or maybe just give a one-time gift of $25 or $100 or whatever the Lord might lay on your heart. I wouldn't want you to do it now immediately, but pray about it maybe over the weekend. And just think if this is something that the Lord might nudge you to give. And hopefully He will do that if you're able. But if you can't, man, continue to hold us up in prayer. We sure need it, sure would appreciate it. We're going through a lot of changes, a lot of very important things that the Lord has put before us that I know are going to minister to hundreds and thousands of people. And we're really excited about our Christ-centered ministry reaching more people. So if you can help in any way.